joined in the studio with Murray State University President Dr. Bob Davies. As always, I appreciate you taking the time to come up and speak with us.
Thank you for allowing me the time. I find these discussions up here at WKMS to be in a very solid way to talk about issues facing our university, talk about how we're handling various challenges, seeking opportunities, and a great way to communicate to the broader, not only to the campus community, but to the broader community as well.
The Murray State campus is bustling. Class is back in session.
Isn't that great? You know, I always have to say that among my favorite times of the year is the beginning of classes and then also commencement. Love to see them come. Love to see them go. I guess it might be the way to look at that.
So what are some of your expectations for this academic year and thoughts on the freshman class?
Well, I think that as we start a new academic year, it's full of optimism and seeing a lot of the hard work pay off from the previous months of planning. Gives welcoming the faculty back. And this year with the faculty summit, I thought that was an excellent way to start off the academic year in really looking at pedagogical skills and looking at the new students, if you will, and the challenges and opportunities of teaching and learning and experiential learning and hands-on learning, all those different types of things is something that's very, very important. And so, it's just a great feeling on the campus. As I look at the upcoming academic year, I see us continue to move forward in our vision and mission of rigor, relevance, and excellence in our academic programs, making sure that we continue to emphasize that we are a high-caliber, high-quality academic institution that is based on rigor, that when our students come to Murray State University, they are going to be challenged like they've never been before academically, and they're going to be better for the outcome of that, better in critical thought, better in research, better in logic, better in creative activities, a better understanding of the global society and how they fit into it. And I think that's, part of our effort is to impart on our students and empower them to not only compete at the global world, but also to collaborate within the global world. And so a lot of these different programs and ideas and to see the innovation from our faculty and on how to achieve that is absolutely outstanding. Our freshman class this year is academically one of the highest academic standards that we've had in a very, very long period of time. Our ACT is above 24 for the first time in literally this century. 50% of our freshman class comes from the top 25% of their graduating class. 45% of our freshman class has a GPA of 3.75% or higher. 85% have a 3.0 or higher. The number of students needing remedial courses has declined significantly. Just needing one remedial course has declined significantly. And those that need two or more has really declined overall. So again, some very strong indicators. Our Honors College continues to blossom. 200 new students, 499 total. A mere 2 years ago, we had 121 new students and 372 students total. So again, as we put strategies in place 3 years ago, we talked about this as a campus. Do we want to focus in on as many freshmen and as many students as we can, or do we want to focus in on making sure we have the right students? And when I say right students, those are academically prepared to handle the rigors of our programs, that when they come to Murray State, the probability of success is ingrained in them already. We want capable, high-achieving students. We're not looking to be, quote-unquote, an elite university. We're not looking to have an ACT average of 32, but we want to make sure we're getting students who are able to handle the rigors of our classes. And those strategies are paying off. This year's freshman to sophomore retention rates is slightly above 75%. Again, first time we've had that in a very long period of time. So we do have a lot of things that we can point to and look at success. We're also seeing, again, our sophomore to junior retention rate increase a little bit. We need some work there. And also junior to senior and everything else, we still have some work there. But as an enrollment management thought process, and this is what I need to continue to remind, especially individuals outside of higher education, we go on 4 and 6 year cycles. And so when we have a real large class that had lower retention and lower academic inputs coming in, we're going to have that trickle down effect for the next 4 or 5 years as they walk through the system. And that's part of the challenges that we're dealing with today. This year's class right now stands around 1440, 1444 in that neck of the woods, a little bit lower than the 1502 we had last year. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. Some of those are within our control, and we are being very aggressive in our recruiting of freshmen and doing some things very differently, utilizing technology, social media, and a lot of other influencers. And some of the things are outside of our immediate control that had an impact on that. We were on track to have a good freshman class of 1550 all the way up through the end of June. The impact of the J.H. Richmond incident is there. How much of it was, we can't quantify that, but that is something that obviously played an impact of us going from a projected 1550 or thereabout freshman class to one that's a little bit less. But again, the quality of the freshman class is very, very high. The standards that we set are very, very high. The strategies that we put in place to attract high caliber, successful students seems to be working. As you know, we now admit based on tiers, tier 1, 2, 3, and 4, very creative. Tier 1 being students that are at the higher end, tier 4 are students who are more akin to retention, remedial work and whatnot. Our tier 1 class this year is 802 students, and we had a 36% yield. That means that we are competing with the highest caliber students against other high caliber universities, and we're having a yield success factor that is above the national the norm on that. Our tier four students, our tier three students, that's where we have actually less yield, and I think a part of that is because of the rigors that they know that they're going to be coming into. So as we look at the number of students that join us, we got a lot from tier one. We would like more from tier two. I think that we have some challenges there in which we need to alter some of our scholarship offerings to reflect talents that are not necessarily captured in test scores and GPA, and we'll be working on that for the next year's freshman class. So again, I think we got a lot of good things in motion. As always, enrollment is something that will be critical to Murray State University. With the addition of a Provost Arant, him working with the deans, I think we're going to be able to do some very exciting academic innovation and do some things there academically that will attract a lot of our tier one and more tier one, tier two students. I think that also with him spending a lot of time and working with the deans to energize them for the upcoming several years in terms of state appropriations and everything else will put us in fine stead there. That allows me to spend a lot more time on the enrollment side and really working with the campus as a whole to focus in on the recruitment and retention of our students. That is our driver, and we will need to continue to advance those issues.
And of course, the enrollment numbers aren't finalized until later in the fall as well.
That's correct. And it's an interesting process where, the enrollments are every day we get new reports, they're fluid, they change around. We knew that this year that we would have, in terms of the numbers, a slightly lower overall, again, because of freshman classes 4, 5, and 6 years ago and some trends that are there. Last year's bump up reversed the trend of smaller freshman classes for the first time in 3 years, and we thought that was going to start a new trend, and we anticipated that until late in the enrollment season. I think we'll be able to recover fairly quickly and start that advancement trend of slightly higher freshman classes in the future. But again, I think it goes back to what, as we see a Murray State, it's not focusing in on just getting as many students as possible. It's getting the students who will be successful here. We focus in on high achieving, high caliber. We need to continue to focus in on a very wide and diverse student body population. Part of our challenges too is the international student population. There's a lot of external factors there, and that will play out over time. But we control our recruitment efforts. We control the way in which we recruit. We control when the student is here, how we make sure that they have all possibilities for retention and moving to graduation. And so the things that we can control, we are doing, and in some cases we're going to need to be a little bit more effective and efficient in those. Those have been identified, and we're working those out. There's other things always that are going to be out of our control. We control how we respond to those things, and that's what I keep on preaching to our team.
Does a smaller, higher achieving class with better retention rates, better graduation rates, help offset enrollment pressures as we look towards performance funding?
It does. You can bring in a much larger class and have a much lower retention. And then at that sophomore year, you're at the same level if you had a smaller class but a higher class that's retained. And then in your junior year, because, again, of the higher caliber class, you're going to have more of those students advance to the junior year. You're always going to continue to lose the students if you just focus in on a larger, less qualified class. It's also a lot more expensive to recruit a student than it is to retain a student. So economically, there's a lot of benefits of that line as well. Again, I think that we set a goal of 1,600. We obviously did not achieve that goal. We were on track to come pretty darn close to it, between 1,550 and 1,630, given some variations in yield rates. But we were right there, and at the end of the day, we didn't make it, but we've identified some clear reasons of how we can change some things to get those numbers back up. And then there are obviously some things were outside of our immediate control in with regards to the J.H. Richmond. We're not going to hold that as an excuse. We need to get to a point where we're having 1,550 to 1,600 students. We don't need to be the largest university in the Commonwealth. We don't need to have the largest freshman class in the Commonwealth. We need to have the right freshman class for Murray State and the rigors that we pursue.
The pension issue is on the top of many minds this week as a new consulting report came back with recommendations for numerous drastic measures to fix some of the issues. Western Kentucky University's president, Dr. Timothy Caboni, spoke recently on implications for universities and a possible exit from the state retirement system. Is Murray State involved in this discussion?
I really enjoy working with President Caboni. He just started over at Western Kentucky University. And at Murray State, that we've talked a lot in my fourth year here, we've talked about the implications of the pension system and the lack of funding of that system. It is a significant problem, and that's something that we have not shied away from. You know, just looking at the numbers that we presented to the board at the recent events, in fiscal year 2010, so the 2009-2010 academic year, our contribution was roughly around 11%. It is now at 49.47%. In real dollars, in fiscal year 10, we paid approximately $4.3 million towards the pensions. This past year, it was nearly $14 million towards the pension. Each time the pension cost goes up, other state agencies receive state funding to cover those pension increases. We do not. These are additions to our cost structure. So that is a significant cost burden to the university. This biennium was $1.3 million on addition. So, you know, as we dealt with the budget contractions of last year, $1.3 million of this was due to pension increases. Those are funds that are obviously very important to those in the system. It is a significant financial indicator. We ended this last year, the fiscal year that just ended, with revenues exceeding expenses by roughly $10 million. Before pension liabilities had to be applied, we were sent the pension liability, and that is from the KERS, KTRS audits in Frankfurt. We do not control those numbers. It is solely up to the performance of the pension system, and is based on what they calculate as our percent share of the increased liability. That was $20 million. So we went from a positive 10 to a negative 10. And I need to stress, this is an accounting mechanism. This is not a cash flow. We did not write a check for $20 million. It does not impact our liquidity or anything along those lines, but it does impact our net assets. If it was the opposite, if the pensions were performing better and everything else, and it could be a positive impact to our net assets. But for the last many years, it has been a significant negative. So Mr. Caboni is absolutely right. It is a huge impact on all the universities. We have, as university presidents, have been asked by legislators and others to present several ideas. And one of the ideas that the presidents discussed was for all new employees, faculty and staff, that they would be put onto a defined contribution plan versus a defined benefit plan. That was a discussion with our HR directors, our chief budget officers. It was a discussion with our political lobbyists on how that would be impacted and perceived. And then also, obviously, all of the presidents also weighed in. To me, it is a possible solution that needs to be discussed among many other ones. The PFM report that came out yesterday, 180 pages long, it's phenomenal reading for those who are interested in pensions. There are a lot of recommendations in there and impacts a lot of people in very serious ways. I'm not qualified to weigh in on if those ways are good, bad, or indifferent. When we as university presidents talked about, again, is a way to start to help mitigate some of the exposure that we have with these increasing costs and also provide us the ability to continue to attract and retain quality faculty and staff members. And a defined contribution policy or defined contribution plan could be a way to do that. I know the PFM model had very specifics, 3% by the employee, 2% match, this, that, and the other. We did not get into those realms, but we did talk about kind of converting to what some people now have the option of doing as a new employee, and that's going to a defined contribution plan and do something akin to those lines. Where this goes in special session and everything else, stay tuned and hold on to your hats.
The six-year capital plan for 2018 to 2024 and the biennial capital budget for 2018 to 2020 were approved by the Board of Regents. In this plan is a request for modernizing electrical and steam pipes and some other things that may not be as lucrative sounding as a new building, but necessary work. Can you elaborate a little bit on the needs and what the plan and budget hope to accomplish in Sure. the timeframes?
Yeah, it is not as sexy as a new building and everything along those lines. And we made this request because we categorize it as a life safety issue because it's getting to a point of that severity. We have an electrical grid that's 40 plus years old in many cases. As I was explaining it to several legislators, wires and sockets and everything else, you know, they kind of glazed over. And I said, just remember, you know, in December, you start setting up your Christmas tree and you check all the lines, your lights individually, and they all work. But then all of a sudden you start linking them up to everything and plugging everything in, and all of a sudden one strand goes out and, you know, it doesn't work, and then you get that one to work and then another one goes out. And in a certain way, that's what we're facing here at Murray State. We have an electrical grid process that was set up 40 years ago. We have added new buildings, the engineering physics building, the latest, the whole science complex within the last 10 years or thereabouts. And also just the increased over the 40 years, the increased demand on electricity because of iPads and iPhones and various other things that laptops and computer technology and everything else that is being added to that process. We keep on adding strands and strings to our Christmas tree, if you will. We need to significantly upgrade that entire grid process. Our team has done an amazing job patching things together and getting all the lines to work and everything else. But every day we get a little surge here and there and things start to break down in un-uniform manner. And so again, our team has to come back in and start patching things together. And we need to get to a point where we can rely on our electrical grid without those type of concerns. And that's one of the processes. The other one's the steam pipes. A central steam pipe was put in the 1930s and thereabouts. We have chillers and steamers that are 50 years old. Their useful life is 25. We've done an amazing job of protecting the assets. I received an email the other day from a faculty member in Faculty Hall where his office, which is in one of the key areas, was registering about 65 degrees because of the chiller going through and everything else. And all those things are handled right now centrally. When that was put into play, it was state of the art. Now, with technology and everything else, we can start rolling those things back and putting those building by building by building and giving. You know, we did that recently with the library, for example, mainly because the pipes going to the library disintegrated. That's why we had all that steam popping out last December. And, you know, some people thought I just wanted to make it look like New York in the Christmas time. No, those pipes were crumbling. And with all that steam going through there, you just can't shut it off and fix it because then you're cutting the steam off to all other buildings on the campus and there's no heat going on. And so, you know, we've got these issues. We've got to deal with them. It is not sexy. It is not, we're not going to have a big old ribbon cutting for the electrical grid or, you know, dedicate the you know, we're going to name a pipe in someone's honor. You know, these are the infrastructure of the university, and we positioned this with state legislators as life safety, and also preserving the assets of the state, which is these phenomenal buildings that we have in play. So there's the electrical grid, and the steam infrastructure, and then also just the buildings themselves. We have a lot of single pane windows, for example. We need to start upgrading those, becoming more energy efficient, and those type of things. In total, that's a $32 million package. When we presented it to the Capital Planning Advisory Committee, and we were the last one to go, and we heard a lot of wish lists from other universities. And, you know, they're really phenomenal about new buildings, this, that, and the other. The money's not there. The bonding capacity is not there. The appetite for bonding is not there. Legislators need and understand where we are fiscally, and we need to also be responsible to that. And so when we came forward with, and I was very blunt with them, I said, we have one priority and one priority only. It is this. It's not sexy, but it is essential. And all the legislators and the private citizens on the Capital Advisory Committee came up to me afterwards and thanked me personally for being realistic, for being forthright, for understanding the fiscal situation that the state is in at this current period of time, and putting a significant priority that if we added a new building, we're just going to be adding to the problem. On the fiscal side of the buildings, we are in good shape with the number of buildings and everything else we have at this time. Do we have deferred maintenance issues? Yes, we do. Every year we're setting aside million plus dollars to fix that. We're doing some amazing things in Faculty Hall along those lines. There's other things across the campus that we are addressing. I'm very proud of the plan that we have for the deferred maintenance. It takes time, but we just got to keep on knocking that off, and we are doing that. Obviously, we'd love to do it faster than we are, but you know, we got to deal with our own fiscal realities. The electrical grid, the steam pipe, that and the building systems are our priority, and that's what we're moving forward on. And I feel we'll be successful in obtaining some funding for that. If we do obtain funding for it, again, it's not a, no pun intended, it's not a flip of the switch, it's done. It'll take time. I mean, we're talking about, again, replacing something that's been in existence for 40 or 50, 40 plus years for the electrical grid, for the steam pipes and the chiller pipes. You know, we're talking something that's been in existence for 60 years. And so it's going to take time to go through the campus and do all the work that needs to be done. It's almost all underground. So that presents some interesting challenges in and of itself. So that will be a 3-year or so project that would be, we would just systematically go through it. Right now we're mapping all of the electrical grid aspects. You know, again, as you keep on adding things on, you got to keep on updating. So we're mapping all those things, mapping the significant problems where we are, so we know what to fix first, and we'll continue to move forward.
We'll await a further update from the legislature on this.
It will go to them as part of the capital project, and given the response that we received from the Capital Planning Advisory Committee, I think we'll receive a positive response from legislators. That doesn't mean it's automatically funded. There's a long process to go through, but I think we have an extremely good argument, a necessary argument to put this forward.
Speaking of new buildings, there's a new engineering and physics building now online.
Beautiful. Yeah. Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. Excited to see that come alive. I had a chance to walk through it now with students, which is always exciting to hear their comments, to have the openness of that building that invites collaboration between and among the disciplines is absolutely outstanding. And to see the students actually start that process to move forward is very good. The faculty comments with regards to the labs and teaching the spaces and everything else has been just so positive to hear. So I'm very, very excited about that facility. You know, in looking at our enrollment numbers, we talked about a little bit before. This year, the sciences, and specifically engineering and physics, saw a big bump in the freshman enrollment and transfer enrollments. And I know there's no question in my mind that part of that is due to the new facility.
And for students and alumni looking to find these buildings, there's a new online campus map. How will this serve the campus community in a new way?
Well, it's actually, to me, the map itself is dynamite. It's an app that you can download on your phone. It's using the Google Map type of concept, and all of our buildings numbered, and you can press on it. It'll give a brief description about it and those type of things. But more important to me, it was created by students. They saw a need. They saw students walking around with these paper maps and kind of trying to figure out where things are, this, that, and the other. They saw a need. They developed the app. They put the app into play. They partnered with our University Advancement, the branding, marketing, communication team, to make it go live on the website. They did all the right things to make it mobile friendly as well, which is, you know, again, something that we didn't think about 5 years ago. You have it for your desktop and then worry about the phones and iPads. Now you got to bring that all into play. So they did all those great things. I think it's fun to watch students walk around campus looking at their phone and the map. So I know they're using it, and it's being effective.
There's a town hall meeting coming up regarding the future of health services on campus. Can you describe what this meeting will entail?
Well, one of the things is we operate, and we do a lot of this. What we call self-operate is the jargon used in higher education. We self-operate our health facility, meaning it's all done by Murray State employees. It's funded out of the education in general pool. And as part of our budgetary discussions, we need to determine what we will continue to do and what we will continue to offer. And sometimes those are two different discussions. I'm committed to offering health services on campus specifically for our students. That is the primary audience. The secondary audience is faculty and staff. We do definitely want to keep that. But again, I think that that's something that we need to fully understand and investigate, because there are costs involved with that. One of the discussion points was to outsource student health services. Many universities do. We have launched an RFP, a request for proposals, out to the many entities that do operate health services. Some of the companies and businesses that we expect to respond to the RFP are national, and this is their sole business, is offering health services on college campuses. Others will be what I would call local or regional in nature. There are health services that offer their services to the general public, and this would be one of their ventures to have it on campus. So I see a mix of those. We will go through the RFPs, and if there are some that we would like to invite on campus, we will do that. If there's one that we would like to move forward on, we will do that. There has not been a decision that we will definitely outsource or no longer self-operate. That is to be determined based on the request for proposals that have been forthcoming. The town hall meeting on September the 14th will provide the opportunity for Don Robertson and Jackie Dudley, who are the two vice presidents leading this effort, to provide where we stand, an early review of the proposals that have been submitted, and to discuss the process moving forward. And then also, most importantly, to answer any questions from faculty, staff, and students as we proceed. Again, I want to assure that we do want to have health services on campus. I think that is an important component of our community. The primary audience is students. The secondary is the faculty and staff. I think it is an extreme benefit that we are able to provide health services to faculty and staff. Most universities do not. This is actually the first one that I've ever worked on that does. I think it is a solid benefit, and if we're able to continue that effort, we will do so. But at the same time, we must manage our fiscal assets as best we can.
Family weekend is coming up with many highlights, including a new legacy tailgate. Can you describe what that is and what some of the highlights will be?
Sure. The family weekend's a lot of fun. It's exciting to see the parents and the grandparents and aunts and uncles all come back to campus, and the various activities that go on, ranging from the musical productions from our choirs, our bands, our symphony, jazz band. They put on an amazing show on that Saturday afternoon. We do a lot of other traditional things. The Commonwealth Honors Academy has a kind of a quasi-graduation ceremony that's really fun and exciting. The residential colleges all do something for their parents and coming back. So it is just an amazing time. The Alumni Legacy Tailgate Party is a brand new activity. One of the things we have at Murray State is a lot of legacies. And I find that to me is a sign of quality as well. If moms and dads are going to send their sons and daughters here, you know, and they went here, that's a big stamp of approval. But we have approximately 600 thereabouts of students who we know that their parents and our grandparents went to Murray State University. We can't make all the connections, but we know of at least of that many. And so that's going to be a new tailgate party, if you will, for the legacy. So moms and dads with students here can meet other moms and dads who have students here and grandparents and those type of things. It gives us a great opportunity, again, to celebrate the family tradition, if you will, of Murray State University.
That's all of my questions. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, again, I want to send my thanks and appreciation to all the faculty and staff and who continue on a daily basis perform exceptionally here at Murray State University in advancing our wonderful cause. We do obviously have challenges in front of us, but we as a university have continued and will continue to overcome these challenges. Even in the midst of all of the things that are going on, we need to remain optimistic. We need to remain optimistic that, one, we are striving for excellence. We need to remain optimistic that we are recruiting highly capable and highly caliber students who are choosing to attend Murray State because of their hard work. We will continue, obviously, to have fiscal pressures, but we will continue to manage them in the best efforts of the university and keep our university at the top. Having said that, I must also announce or put forward that just yesterday, the Washington Monthly Magazine came out with their best bang for the buck. We came in at number 28 in the South. We are the third highest ranked universities in Kentucky. Two universities that are ahead of us are both privates, so we are the top-ranked public university. The next closest to one on the public side is at number 66. We're well ahead of our peer publics. And the best bang for your buck is not based on the cheapest university. And on that note, that the universities with the lowest tuition are actually ranked in the 100s. And it's based on what you're able to do with the graduates in relationship to the tuition that you charge. How successful are you in retention? How successful are you in graduation? How successful are your students who graduate from your institution getting jobs? What's the debt load? All those different types of things that we manage very, very well. So again, that's just a real positive note to end on, is a direct attribute to our wonderful faculty and our wonderful staff. So with that, thank you, and go Racers.